Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Coming up on DTNS, Microsoft's AI is the best at captioning. Zoom wants you to hold all your events on Zoom. And Clear wants all your data, just to make your life easier. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, September 14th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
October 14th it is, in fact, Tom,
well,
and I am at
September,
Studio Redwood.
So I guess it's still September.
Sarah Lee. Yeah. I'm Ron Burgundy.
I don't know what time it is here, but I'm Scott Johnson in Salt Lake City.
I'm Roger Chang, the show's producer. You can point the finger at me.
Joining us, it says, is Peter Wells, freelance tech journalist. How's it going, Pete?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, September 14th is my birthday, so I reckon stick with that.
That's why we did that.
Yay, of course. That's why we did.
Wish you
See, it was all. It was, you know, it was divine intervention.
Folks, we were just talking. Roger fixed social networking on Good Day Internet. So you might want to get that show, become a patron and get it at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Reuters sources say that Huawei is in talks to sell its Honor smartphone unit. Honor phones are marketed as budget phones. Digital China, which distributes Honor phones for Huawei, is reportedly the lead candidate to buy Honor's brand, R&D ad supply chain management business. Other possible buyers include TCL and Xiaomi. If Honor is sold, it will no longer be subject to U.S. restrictions placed on Huawei.
Oh, that would make sense. Spotify is testing a podcast format, or is it? I don't know. It's some kind of format that allows you to use full music tracks while you talk, without having to obtain a separate license from Spotify itself. Spotify will let creators make music podcasts in its Anchor creation tool, and that would include the songs. Anchor creators in Canada, Australia, the UK, US, New Zealand, and Ireland will all have access to that feature. The shows can only be played on Spotify, and only Spotify Premium subscribers will be able to hear the full tracks.
OnePlus officially announced the OnePlus 8T. We told you it was happening, and it happened today. 6.55-inch phone, 120Hz refresh rate on a Snapdragon 865 processor for $749. The OnePlus 8T is up for pre-order right now with a ship date of October 23rd.
Dropbox announced Tuesday it's going to make remote work permanent for pretty much all of its employees. The company will set up Dropbox Studios. Those are physical locations in San Francisco, Seattle, Austin, and Dublin, where employees can come to meet in person when they either need to or want to. Those studios will be set up when it is safe to do so in the regions that they're in.
Facebook temporarily reduced the reach of a story from the New York Post about Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, that sources, email, and video from a laptop said to have belonged to Hunter Biden. Journalists outside the New York Post have questioned whether the information is framed accurately, whether the computer was owned by him, and whether the information is from a reputable source. Facebook will work with its fact checkers to make a final decision on the story.
Yeah, we'll probably talk a little bit more about that with Justin Robert Young tomorrow. But today, there's always a few more details out of an Apple announcement that trickle out. For instance, the actual price of the iPhone 12 is $29 more than they said, unless you get it from AT&T or Verizon, right? It's $699 or maybe it's $729. Depends on where you get it. Little stuff like that. For instance, Apple also announced it will no longer include headphones or wall chargers with the new iPhones. We talked about that yesterday. Just going to get the Lightning to USB-C cable to reduce packaging, reduce waste, help the environment. But they did lower the price if you need to buy one. So if you need a wall charger or a pair of wired headphones, they used to cost $29. Now they cost $19.
Interesting. The other thing I wanted to just mention here, it feels like a weird oversight, but not going straight to USB-C in the manufacturing of the new phone is really odd to me. I don't know what the actual adapter is going to do for people other than, since it's a male connector on the one end and another male on the other, it's going to adapt for power, and that's it. I don't know why they didn't just, well, I guess they didn't go that way because a lot of people have Lightning connectors and cables already.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like right now I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know if I even have a USB-C wall connector, but it doesn't matter because I'll get a Lightning cable, right?
Yeah,
in other words, I could use an old Lightning cable to plug into a new iPhone. If it was USB-C, I'd have to get a new cable too.
That's true. I wish it was flipped the other way. The way I'm using USB-C for so many things now. I've got a Switch and an iPad Pro and all these other things that use USB-C. So I've got those cables and those bricks everywhere. Give me a reverse adapter that goes the other way and we're golden. But I do look forward to the day where everybody's on one standard and USB-C is rad. So my own personal opinion is drop the stupid Lightning.
I mean, it's not just you, Scott. I had a friend who was, for whatever reason, he wasn't able to watch the event live yesterday. And he was like, USB-C, just tell me USB-C. And I was like, USB-C compatible? That's what we got. Good enough, right? And he's like, USB. So, yeah, it's something that people care about.
Peter, does it matter to you?
Absolutely, yeah. I wish they had gone. As soon as the iPads switched to USB-C, I wished they would have moved across. And I think, like, a lot of the criticisms they got about Dongle Town for their laptops would have gone away if the iPhone had moved to USB-C as well, because suddenly, yeah, like Scott was saying, it's handy to have the one connector on one end, but if it's the same connector on both ends, then it's just the same silly cable that you have to have in your bag. You don't have to care what white cable that looks exactly the same that you're pulling out of your bag is. It's going to charge whatever is in your hand, whether it's your Switch, your Android phone, your iPhone, or whatever. So, yeah, I'm totally on board. But I don't think we're going to see it until I think it's more likely that the iPhone will lose all ports rather than getting a USB-C port.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. What else we got, Scott?
Sorry, that idea just floored me. You're probably right. I don't like that either. I want a little bit of holes in my hardware. I want a little bit of place to put stuff and worry about water and too much dust. Anyway, you can now pair two HomePod minis to each other for stereo sound. So you saw this yesterday and you were thinking, hey, what if those weren't together? Well, now they can. Just like the regular HomePod, though, a mini is a regular HomePod. And a regular HomePod cannot be paired together for stereo.
Yeah. Oh, so that makes me so mad. So,
yeah, you got a big, huge one and a little tiny one. It's a little weird, though, Sarah.
You can still share music across them. The whole home thing still works. You just can't use the two for stereo. And I imagine it's because they have different output levels. So
totally.
It would be hard to balance them.
And this is the exact situation I was talking about with Terrence from SnobOS on the show yesterday, because we're both Sonos people. It's the same thing. My Sonos ones are, you know, not deprecated. Some of my older Sonos products are. So there's only certain things that you can do, you know, when you're trying to create this cool surround situation in your house. However, the new HomePod minis, $99. Okay, you get a couple, make them a stereo pair. But if you bought the original, which is, you know, a very nice product, but just overpriced in a lot of people's minds, and the fact that it is not compatible is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I would. I want two of these, but I don't know if I'm. I hadn't even considered the idea of having them as stereo speakers. I'm more considering this idea of put one in here somewhere, and when I go upstairs, it just sort of continues playing the Shins or whatever it is I'm into that day. That seemed like that's a cool thing, and other products have obviously done this, but that's what my purchase is about. But now knowing that I can do it in stereo, I mean, I don't know. There's probably some use cases where I'll do it, But I don't have an original HomePod because that thing was ridiculously expensive. So totally cool having the two little ones.
Well, if you look over my shoulder, you can see one of the new Google Nest speakers, which sounds incredible for its size. So I don't know whether the little mini HomePod will reach that level. But yeah, Sarah, I was Sonos curious for a little while, but I found I got burnt by the different compatibility, and so now I'm just a Google Home everywhere. And I'm surprised I didn't set off the 17 speakers that are like within earshot of me. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on to a little bit more Apple news that was discussed yesterday. The company announced it will include a free 3-month free trial of Apple Arcade for anybody who buys a new iPhone or iPad or Mac or iPad Touch or Apple TV after October 22nd. Kind of cool if you like Apple Arcade. The service normally costs $4.99 per month, and Apple will launch a bundle of services, including Apple Arcade, later this year.
Yeah, so it's weird because you don't get it till after the first round of iPhone ship, so you have to wait. I don't know if this is a way to like discourage people from all ordering at once. And then at some point, there's going to be this Apple One bundle, so if you have 3 free months of Arcade, but you're paying for other stuff and then you bundle it all together, is it really going to make that much of a difference? But yeah, I mean, if you're in the situation where you're buying after October 22nd, you don't want Apple One, but you do want to try Arcade and play some games. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. They also did the same thing with the launch of the 11, if I'm not wrong. I got 3 months free of Arcade as a launch product with that phone rollout. So it's been a year.
Did you keep using it, Scott?
I did for a number of months. And then canceled when things really slowed down. There was like a period there where they just weren't getting new stuff. And it, for a while, they were getting like 2-3 new titles a week. And it was like, whoa, this is great. I'll just keep trying this stuff. And I got to a point where it just wasn't happening at that rate, at that click. And I just said, you know what? Let's put it off for a while. Wait for something super rad to come out. And honestly, nothing's really jumped out at me quite yet. So the titles, or a few have actually, but they've been better on PC, for example. So I just go play them there. So, the motivation hasn't been there, but do I get a fresh 3 months if I get an iPhone 12? They didn't really get into that. And I don't think we know that, but my guess is probably not. These are probably for new people, getting the phone for the first time.
I think it will actually be for older people who have had the 3 months free before, because it, to me, this sounds like not enough people are using Apple Arcade, and they want to get people back in to see what games are in there.
Yeah.
And last little Apple follow-up, Snapchat said it'll launch a lens that will take advantage of that LiDAR sensor that's coming to the iPhone Pros. The depth sensing in LiDAR will let Snapchat place items in scenes at different depths. So if you've got grass, it'll be behind you. It'll look like it's actually on behind you. Or on something on a table in front of you will look like it's in front of you. It'll also let things like birds fly behind real objects so they can fly behind your head and disappear and then come back. And, of course, Snap is going to update its lens studio so that you'll be able to create lenses yourself that support those LiDAR-powered lenses.
Seems to me if that really takes off, that phone and those features, like it's already going to be a limited access phone. Not everyone's going to be able to afford the Pro, but if those features take off, I think you'll start to see Apple they probably do this anyway, but I think future phones will just have these camera capabilities, this LiDAR capability, and pretty soon all
if
the
it
social
on,
media
there's
stuff
enough of them. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it has to catch on, I guess. Microsoft's algorithms can caption images with better accuracy than humans, topping the NoCaps captioning benchmark. Captioning model will be available through Azure Cognitive Services for any developer to use, as well as Seeing AI. This is Microsoft's app for blind and visually impaired users. It will come to Microsoft Office apps later this year.
Once again, Microsoft AI, better than humans at some stuff. And this may not sound like much when you say captioning, but it's the kind of thing that helps search results. It's the kind of thing, if you've looked for stock photography, captioning can really help with that. It also will be in Office. You'll be able to use this in PowerPoint. So you could put a thing in and captions automatically show up, or it makes it easier for you to find the image you want to put into PowerPoint. Not to mention the accessibility stuff that you talked about there, Scott. Like, putting it in Seeing AI so that you have more accurate descriptions of what people are seeing based on this, right? If you point the phone at something and say, what is that? This will be more accurate at determining what that thing is.
If they can roll this out to social media platforms, this would be incredible for the visually impaired. Because when was the last time you actually wrote up a description of the image you just posted to Twitter or Instagram or Facebook? No one does it. So if the robots can do it for us, then that will make visually impaired people's experiences of social media so much better.
That's so interesting. I didn't even consider the use case of social media. In my head this whole time since prep show till now, I've been thinking, oh, well, how will this work in Word and PowerPoint? And just very baseline thinking about where Microsoft might integrate this. But as a way to, I don't know, put a photo up in Twitter, even for somebody who isn't visually impaired, to be able to say, well, here's this photo in France somewhere, and have that thing go blip and tell me exactly where and what and all that. That's pretty big. I don't know if it makes us dumber because we don't have to look stuff up anymore more and more, but it's an interesting use case I hadn't really thought of. And certainly for the visually impaired and otherwise those looking for good accessibility features, absolutely. Like that, you've blown
not
my
even
mind
just for social media, right? For websites, right. And other images as well. I think sure. that's a really good point. Anybody that's using a screen reader for anything would appreciate this being used. Because yeah, it just automates that stuff.
Well, I don't know if any of y'all have heard of Zoom. It's kind of a thing.
Tell me more.
Yeah. Okay. So Zoom has started beta testing a service called OnZoom that lets paid Zoom users host and sell tickets to online events of up to 1,000 attendees. Up to 1,000 attendees. But, you know, that's an event. OnZoom takes credit cards and also PayPal. It won't take a cut of ticket sales. OnZoom isn't beta, though, which will last until next year. Nonprofits can take donations through pledging. Similar products exist from Eventbrite and Meetup. So Zoom is not the first venture to get into this, but they are kind of the big name these days. Google launched a Fundo for YouTubers in September, if you're familiar with that. Zoom also announced apps that can integrate into the Zoom experience so you don't have to switch back and forth between apps. 35 launch partners include the likes of Asana, Atlassian, Dropbox, HubSpot, Slack, SurveyMonkey, Rike, and Zendesk. They have a lot of partners. Zoom also announced end-to-end encryption, which will start rolling out next week. That was something that, you know, it got a lot of flack for not having up until this point. Users will have to turn it on once it's available, but they can. And if everyone is in a meeting and has it turned on, a green shield will appear at the top left, letting you know your meeting is encrypted. At launch, if end-to-end encryption is on, you won't be able to use live transcription, however. Join before a host and a few other features.
Yeah, the encrypted stuff is finally here. Good. If you've got somebody calling into your Zoom, though, it's not going to be end-to-end encrypted because you can't end-to-end encrypt a phone call. So that's why they're saying, look, everybody in the meeting has to have the setting on, has to be using the desktop or the mobile client or a Zoom room to do this. Otherwise, we can't end-to-end encrypt it. But yeah, good for them.
And you could have, you know, if you're doing something in a corporate environment, you could have rules in place and IT rules and stuff where people are all end-to-end and you're good to go. So that seems like a good thing in the right direction. In terms of this OnZoom thing, it's interesting because I think it's as much as others have already been doing it, it's kind of a response to what people are already doing with Zoom as their resource. I've seen plenty of concerts pop up where they're like, buy a ticket, you get a virtual concert, but the ticketing stuff is all handled through some other party or PayPal Direct or whatever. And over here, you've got Zoom as the thing that's actually bringing you the event. Zoom probably just said, well, why aren't we the middlemen here? Why aren't we doing the entire process for that? There must be enough of that going on that they feel like it could be another space for them to make a little money. So not surprised at all. And I think it makes sense. Like I would rather do my concert in one stop, no matter who I'm getting it with. And Zoom does too, I guess.
Yeah, I every Friday I'm on a pub trivia quiz because of course we can't leave the house. So and that's over Zoom. And yeah, it's this mess of seven different services that you have to jump through to get to the trivia quiz. But I just found it funny the Zoom apps that they announced. I remember a couple of weeks ago I was listening to a podcast and they tech podcast and they said, you know, Zoom is really dropped the ball. They've got so much kind of mind share at the moment, and they're not innovating fast enough to launch new products while they've got their moment in the sun. And I thought, what are you talking about? Like, I'm on Zoom 14 hours a day, and the site has never dropped a connection once. Like, that's innovation in itself. The uptime that they've got, let's just work on that until we get through this whole pandemic thing, and then you can start to roll out some new services. And it's good to see that they're doing that.
You can actually you could also ask the question whether or not it will be as viable an idea if things open up more fully, because there'll be less demand on, say, performers who want to do ticketed concert style things over Zoom. They'll just do tours. and so if we truly are getting to a place where we can congregate in that way again, then this kind of was for naught. But maybe it's no big deal for them. They're just creating kind of a middleman processor and taking advantage of it while it getting good.
Yeah, it's amusing to me that someone would be like, gosh, why Zoom accidentally captured all of our market share and we all are sort of feel forced to use them. Why aren't they making more money off me? Here they go. Because honestly, like, this isn't new, the idea of doing virtual events and charging for them. As you mentioned, Sarah, there's Eventbrite and others out there. But it's because everybody has Zoom that people are like, oh, well, if I can do it in Zoom, then I know people will show up, because there's hardly a person left, at least in our audience, who hasn't used Zoom at least once in the last several months. So if there's a thing on Zoom, you're more likely to go like, oh, yeah, I have Zoom. I guess I could attend that thing. It sounds kind of fun. I mean, Scott, you could do Nerdtacular over Zoom.
Yeah, we've actually talked about it, or we've been talking about doing kind of a from home BlizzCon like you and I did back in 2012. Skipped BlizzCon. Thought a little bit about doing something like that. And it is a format, as much as I hate their sound quality, that the video part of it is covered. Like, you can create a panel of 100 people if you wanted to, or smaller, bigger, whatever, pretty light footprint. The use cases are pretty obvious for it, or for something like it. I kind of wish somebody else was more neck and neck with them right now, but maybe some of this is just they're the name right now. That's just the name, the you VH. Know. And
that's,
you think
of. That's exactly it. I mean, you mentioned that the audio quality is not that great. Mm-hmm. Anything recorded from Zoom is awfully compressed. Trust me. I've tried to audio engineer a few of these great interviews otherwise, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so bad. And there are other solutions, but they're a little bit more limited. They're smaller teams. Mm-hmm. It's like cooler wave files, but you can only have 5 people at a time. You can't do stuff like what Zoom has been able to experience, for better or for worse, over the last year. I know that the company, you know, is definitely been constrained just because of the world and everyone needing to use it. But there are other options. And sometimes I kind of chuckle, you know, where I'm like, Zoom has become the Kleenex of video conferencing. Mm. You know,
you have
lots of different brands, but you call it this one thing. Yeah.
When my mother, who doesn't own a smartphone, said, hey, do you want to Zoom next Sunday? That's when I realized Zoom was a thing.
Well, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Medium's 1-0 has a story from Dave Gershgorn about Clear. If you're not familiar, Clear is a U.S. company best known for operating travel verification programs that let you skip the security line at about 35 U.S. airports. Clear verifies who you are. So you do a thing in person, you prove who you are, they take your thumbprints and all that. And then when you show up for your plane, you just do a fingerprint scan or an iris scan and you speed right through. A lot of times you don't even have to show your boarding pass because that's associated with you through Clear. Clear also uses this technology outside of airports. They use it in stadiums in the Bay Area to help speed you through the ticket line. They experimented with touch-to-pay kiosks at the Napa Farms Market concession stand at San Francisco Airport. So you can just pay with your thumb by associating a payment method with your Clear account. Clear also partnered with the Seattle Mariners baseball team for priority stadium access and age verification if you wanted to get a beer or something. Clear partnered with Budweiser on an actual machine that let you take your fingerprint and authenticate not only that you were 21, but also pay for the beer. They say from the moment you put your finger down, you could get your beer in 20 seconds. Most recently, Clear has launched a health verification platform called Health Pass that combines COVID testing and self-reported status. This is self-reported status that is standard in a lot of workplaces where they're like, you need to say, did I have a cold? Did I have a temperature? All of that sort of thing. So they combine all that to clear people to enter their workplace. That includes Seattle's T-Mobile Stadium, where they weren't taking crowds, but they had people there for the Mariners games. That included the 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York, some restaurants, Chopped and Dos Toros in New York City. In fact, the NHL, the National Hockey League, used HealthPass for players and staff during the playoff bubbles that they had in Edmonton and Toronto. At a presentation last year, Clear CEO Karen Seidman-Becker said, quote, "You are your driver's license, your credit card, your health care card, your building access card. Why are you whipping all these cards out?" So I really like this piece on Medium because Dave Gershgorn doesn't raise the alarm and over-sensationalize it. He just lays it out like Clear wants to do this. There's some benefits. Maybe there's some concerns in having a company know all this about you. It's kind of up for you to decide.
Yeah, I've been super curious about it for a long time. And everyone I know who uses it, Tom, you're one of them, sings its praises. Like says, well, yeah, I mean, once you've done, it's like one password or any kind of password manager a little bit.
Right, if
you trust them, then you've got this one stop, you're done. You don't have to think about it ever again. Like there is something to that. It's just all about the right company, and then maybe they're the right company. But you know, is 1Password the right company? Is other one?
What
the
I like about 1Password is they're not the only company. There's also LastPass and KeePass and Dashlane, right? Like this is what concerns me about Clear is they're the only ones vetted to do a lot of this right now.
Yeah, that's my big concern or my big hangup is I need some other choice so I can see what one would offer over the other one or what one failed at and the other one didn't. Or which one got a breach and something terrible happened and the one that didn't. Like, we haven't had enough time with it.
I mean, that's the whole thing, too, is like, what's the downside of this great thing that Tom just laid out? Oh, everything's going to be so much friction being eradicated from your life. Well, if there's a data breach or if the company for some reason has like nefarious reasons to use your data for other things, then that would be terrible. Those things do happen, but you kind of have to, I don't know. I mean, I am on the less paranoid side of the fence when it comes to these sorts of things. Cause I'm like the just getting through an airport, for example, is huge hassle. Everybody hates it. Nobody likes it. You know, Clear sounds great. I am not a Clear member. Sounds wonderful, but just things like, going to a stadium, when we all go back to stadiums, whenever that's going to be. But just, you know, paying for things, having your, you know, like we know who you are, you're in our system already, just the least amount of friction is, to me, is worth it. And maybe that is naive of me to say, but I feel like this is cool rather than scary.
Yeah. So that's interesting because convenience often wins out totally in the end. Like, but there's still this threshold and Pete, I'm super curious what you'd say about this, but I feel like there's a threshold. I don't know what it is for this though, because this feels like every egg in one basket. And as we know that phrase,
totally.
You're supposed to be careful about doing that, right?
Yeah, I think that, the fact that Clear hasn't had a data breach, we haven't seen what that would look like how terrifying that might actually be. So I think that would you need to see that first. And I don't know, Clear has never taken off in Australia just because it's much easier getting through airports in Australia than it is in the US. I would pay for Clear in a second or sign up for it in a second if I had to travel through your airports as much as I travel through my own. But
I missed Clear when I was going back to the Sydney airport. I'm not gonna lie. I was like,
I'm not saying our international experience is a great one, but for domestic, it's just like, hey mate, how you doing? And you walk through. So I can see. I don't know. I definitely think we need something like this if we're talking about opening up stadiums again. And, you know, I miss the footy so much. I want to go see a football game again. I will let my retina be scanned. I'll let someone poke my nose. I don't care if it means I can get to see my football games again. I'll do all of it. So I'm probably going to just sign away anything if it means that I can see football again. And I would imagine a lot of people are in that same situation.
Well, if you have thoughts on this or anything else we talked about on the show, join our Discord. It's a great group in there, and you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS.
Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Norm from Pleasant, Visalia. Well, good to hear that, Norm. Was talking about some iPhones that we talked about yesterday, quite a few form factors. Norm says, I'm a fan of the small form factor, so I thought the iPhone SE was my way to stay in this way. As a result, I'm kind of disappointed that the iPhone 12 mini has come out even smaller than the SE that came out just last year and only slightly larger than the first-gen iPhone SE from 2016. After over 4 years without a small form factor, we get two in 2 years. The new Mini is $300 more than the SE, so I might have skipped regardless, but I'm still a bit bummed. I guess the positive is that Apple will be producing a budget model, the SE, and a smaller version of their flagship model next year. So maybe the iPhone 13 Mini will be my next phone.
Yeah, Norm, I think you and a million others are feeling the same pain of like, wait, you came out with a new thing, not that long after I bought the last thing? Like, it's a never-ending peril, isn't it?
I'm really excited for the Mini, though, because I played with the SE when it came out. I got a review unit for a few weeks, and it is still the older form factor. It is still not the best internals, all that kind of stuff. What the Mini is just as good a phone as all of the giant surfboard-sized phones, but one that I can actually use in my tiny little hands. So I can't wait.
Yeah, it's funny because this is the time I'm thinking about going for the monster one, because even though 7 inches sounds insane, it's basically a small television in my hand. I have big hands and I benefit from a larger phone, and my eyes aren't getting any younger, I can tell you that. So for me, I want to go big now, but I get the value or the interest people are having in going back to a smaller form factor, especially with all the features. This thing's spec for spec, it's the same phone minus the size. And I think that's actually pretty cool.
Well, shout out to our patrons at our master and grandmaster levels, including Dale McCahey, Ali Sanjabi, and Paul Thiessen. Also, big, big thanks to Peter Wells for being with us today. Peter, it's been too long. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm just Peter Wells over on the Twitters. But I did want to mention Meta is a new podcast that's been out for a couple of weeks now. I've had some great guests like Kara Swisher, who is one of my all-time fave tech journos. We've had some great conversations, and it's just it's a podcast about podcast, hence the name. But really, if I'm being honest, it's just an excuse for me to chat to people I like, because I assume that by 2021, everyone will have a podcast, so I'll get to be able to chat to whoever I want to.
Yeah. That's perfect. So check it out. It's called Meta. Got right? M-E-T-A. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. That sounds great. Yeah, good stuff. Always like a new podcast. Also, thanks to Scott Johnson. Scott, what's been going on in your world?
Well, speaking of new podcasts, the Current Geek Chronicles Season 1 ends today with the release of Episode 8. Actually came out yesterday. So if you are interested in checking out what our final episode of the season is, we'll have some bonus stuff coming up. But go check it out. We talk about mocap and CGI and the movies and TV and what's new, what's different, what might change, what might never change. That's at currentgeek.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, folks, if you want an ad-free feed of DTNS, support us on Patreon. You get your own personal RSS feed supported directly by you. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/Patreon.
You want to send us an email? Well, guess what? We have an email address, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're also live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more, tell a friend, dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.